Judiciary Committee. Today is Wednesday, April the 5th, 2006. It's now 8:41 a.m. We have present Senator Guest, Senator Huggins, myself, Senator Seekins, and Senator French. Today we're going to, our agenda item is the Alaska Rural Justice and Law Enforcement Commission report. And who would like to begin? Mr. Attorney General. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is David Marcus, Attorney General for the State of Alaska, and with me today is Deborah Smith. I'll let her introduce herself.
I'm the Acting U.S. Attorney for the District of Alaska, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you.
Pleased to have you with us. Go ahead, Mr. Attorney General.
We'll start off with Deborah Smith.
She's going to start.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, my name is Deborah Smith. I'm the acting U.S. attorney for this district. I've assumed the co-chair position on this commission, taking the place of Tim Burgess, who has become a U.S. district court judge and was very involved over the last 2 years in the development of the commission, as well as the commission's report. We'd like to thank the committee for taking the time to review the report and giving us this time today to present it to you. I'd like to make a few introductions here at the outset. One of our commissioners is with us, Wilson Justin, the Vice President of the Mount Sanford Tribal Health Consortium. We also have another commission member, Bill Tendesky, the Commissioner of Public Safety. Also like to thank Denise Morris, the President of the Alaska Native Justice Center, for being here today. She's here on behalf of Gail Schubert, a board member of the Alaska Native Justice Center, and two individuals who've helped the commission a great deal during the preparation of the report and their work is Julia Meyer, a special assistant with the Alaska Native Justice Center, and Karen Bitzer, who has done consulting work on the report.
Welcome to all of you, and we're very glad to have you in the Judiciary Committee this morning.
If we could go to the first slide.
Here we go.
Okay. I'd just like to talk briefly about the history of the commission, the commission membership and the process. General Marcus will talk about the recommendation highlights and those recommendations impacting state law. And then we'll just talk briefly about the commission's future and answer any questions that the commission may have. Next slide. The commission was established by Congress in 2004, and the commission was charged basically with studying these four broad areas and how they impacted rural Alaska: law enforcement, judicial services and whether they're sufficient, the impact of alcohol importation and interdiction on law enforcement and crimes, as well as domestic violence and child abuse. The membership, Congress indicated the membership should be appointed by the U.S. Attorney General. And that there should be a federal co-chair, and that there should be a state co-chair, and the state co-chair should be the Alaska Attorney General. I'm now serving as the federal co-chair, but I do like to make it real clear that the bulk of the work as a federal co-chair position was Timothy Burgess's. State co-chair is David Marcus. Former State Attorney General Greg Rinkus and Commissioner Edgar Blatchford also served in this position prior to General Marcus assuming it. The membership includes the Commissioner of Public Safety, Bill Tendesky, a representative of the Alaska Municipal League, Mayor Bruce Botello, an organized borough. There was a seat for that. Ross Schaefer served in that position. It's currently empty. There's a seat also for the Alaska Federation of Natives. H. Buddy Brown and Ethan Shutt have served in that seat. The tribal representative is Wilson Justin. The nonprofit Native Corporation representative is Loretta Bullard, who is the CEO of Kowarik Inc. in Nome. And the Alaska Native Justice Center is represented by Gail Schubert, the Vice President of the Alaska Native Justice Center Board of Directors and the Vice President of the Bering Straits Native Corporation. Jim Torgerson, an attorney with Heller Ehrman, is the non-voting federal court representative. The commission has been staffed with the Alaska Native Justice Center. We've received very essential logistical support from them. We've had various other experts with us on a contractual basis. UAA prepared the bibliography of research. Doe Enterprises handled the drafting of the report and additional support for layout. And the commission is currently in the process of hiring a special assistant to provide future technical support for the work of the commission. Now, the process, the commission meetings began in October 2004 following the appointment of the membership, and working groups were established and met from January to April 2005 to develop specialized recommendations for the commission's consideration. There were public hearings throughout the state from January to June 2005, and the report includes many of the statements that were received from both citizens and experts around the state. And then the public hearings and the working group findings were reviewed by the commission at great length and sorted through, and the initial report and recommendations that we're presenting to you today are the result of those 2 years of work. The working groups that provided the concrete options, many of which will be discussed today, about 50 Alaska residents were involved, and they were formed by topic area. Each group was chaired by a commission member. They limited the membership to 8 to 15 members, and they met very, you know, a lot of work went into those working groups, and we really thank the people who were involved in those. Public hearings were held mostly in rural locations. Some of them were partnered with prominent organizations here in the state. They have been recorded and transcribed for review by commissioners, and portions of them appear on the website of the commission. These are a list of the organizations that provided testimony and the locations where public testimony from residents were taken. And now I'd like to turn it over to General Marcus to discuss the recommendations themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The working groups created over 100 options. The options the Commission adopted were organized into 9 general recommendations, many of which the Commission adopted and are encompassed in the Commission's report and recommendations. The Commission's 9 recommendations are listed on this slide. I won't go through all of them now because I'm going to go through them individually. The first recommendation is to engage in more partnering and collaboration. One of the most significant outcomes of the Commission's work was engendering collaboration between a broad spectrum of stakeholders in trying to address the 4 issues before the Commission. Given limited resources and the daunting nature of the problems it was charged to address, the Commission urges more collaboration between the various governments involved. It specifically recommends collaboration on developing a number of agreements that could better coordinate law enforcement and judicial services in rural Alaska. For example, the Commission suggests developing a voluntary memorandum of understanding between tribes and the state regarding coordination and integration of child protection and domestic violence protective services, working toward development of a state-tribal ICWA agreement, tribal-state partnerships on juvenile justice involving referral mechanisms. So again, we encourage collaboration and more partnering. The second broad group recommends to make systematic changes to improve rural law enforcement. Responding to its first charge, the Commission offers several recommendations to improve law enforcement in rural Alaska, including the development of a statewide uniform and tiered system of certification and training for police and public safety officers with a reasonable opportunity for advancement that could culminate and qualifications to seek full police certification by the Alaska Police Standards Council. It further recommends expansion of police and public safety training and that further work be done toward cooperation in alcohol interdiction. The Commission recommends state efforts to improve rural law enforcement. The state is currently undertaking many efforts to improve law enforcement in rural Alaska. For example, in FY 2005, Governor Murkowski included in this proposed operating budget additional funding for 20 new state troopers, and 6 new criminal prosecutors. Also, the Department of Law received a $2 million grant from the U.S. Department of Justice to create the Rural Prosecution Support Team. The team consists of 3 prosecutors, 1 victim witness paralegal, and 1 law office assistant, and will provide direct support to rural communities statewide, focusing on violent crimes, particularly in western Alaska, tied to alcohol consumption and abuse. As an aside, here are some alarming statistics. In 1997, 100% of defendants committing homicides in western Alaska had consumed alcohol. Alcohol was a factor in 66% of felony assaults, 62% of misdemeanor assaults, 54% of sexual assaults, 48% of offenses against minors, and 21% of sexual abuse cases involving minors. The commission recommends the legislature, the commission commends the legislature, and especially Representative Dahlstrom, for the passage of House Bill 398 in 2004, which authorized the Commissioner of Public Safety and municipalities to establish domestic violence fatality review teams in cases of death or serious physical injury as a result of domestic violence. Commissioner Tandesky may want to address this further, but currently, the Department of Public Safety is working at the state and federal level to implement a pilot project for village safety aides. The idea is to have a local resident working with the village health aide to provide very basic public safety services such as water safety, fire safety, curfew, animal control, suicide prevention, DARE program, etc. This is not intended to be a law enforcement program and would be for small villages, perhaps with a maximum of a population of 400. We are in discussions with federal authorities to obtain authorization to use existing appropriations in this matter. Additionally, the FY07 budget process will have this concept addressed in the conference committee. The Rural Justice Commission also recommends state efforts to address alcohol importation and interdiction. The Commission concluded that further cooperation between the state and federal governments is necessary to enhance drug and alcohol enforcement. Specifically, the Commission found that the lack of adequate Postal Service investigator staffing in Alaska is a significant impediment to alcohol and drug interdiction in rural villages, and recommended that the Department of Public Safety should target alcohol and drug enforcement areas that include local option villages and their hub communities. It also recommended to seek cross-designation authority for drug and alcohol investigators assigned to the target area, as well as a statewide major offender unit personnel. In direct response to the Commission's recommendation, Commissioner Tandesky met with Postal Service leadership in Washington, D.C. earlier this month to discuss this concept. He may want to add to my comments, but he reported that we are not where we want to be yet, but the Postal Service is stepping up their involvement in our drug and alcohol operations as a result of our efforts. Senate Bill 170, sponsored by Governor Murkowski and passed by the legislature in 2004, was the most significant crime package to pass the legislature in 8 years. It provided many significant improvements to local option and bootlegging laws. Some of the most significant are allowing communities to adopt as part of a local option under Title 04 lower amounts of alcohol that may be possessed or imported into the community than may be currently possessed or imported and still presumed to be for personal use rather than for sale. Several communities have already adopted lower limits by local ordinance. If the lower limits are part of a local optional election under state law, however, state law enforcement authorities can help communities enforce them. It raised the penalty for furnishing alcohol to a person under 21 years of age from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony if the offense occurs in a village or municipality that has adopted a local option. However, the village or municipality is able to elect that this increased penalty not apply in their community. The bill also improved the law for forfeiture of property used in bootlegging in several ways. It allowed for the forfeiture of money used in bootlegging offenses and strengthened forfeiture law for vehicles, watercraft, and aircraft used to bootleg alcohol, and allows the state to share the proceeds from forfeited property with municipal law enforcement agencies that participate in the arrest or conviction of bootleggers. The next broad category involves enlarging the use of community-based solutions. The Commission was impressed with the public testimony and evidence that demonstrated the importance and success of approaches responding to the immediate and cultural needs of the community that are locally driven. In this vein, the Commission recommends amending state statute to allow the Division of Juvenile Justice to delegate its authority to tribes to enable the sharing of resources with respect to tribal juvenile offenders, with other amendments to permit tribes to participate in juvenile proceedings and juvenile delinquency treatment. Further recommends expanded funding to help nonprofit organizations in rural Alaska communities develop new programs at the local level to increase prevention, intervention, and treatment of domestic violence and child abuse, and to develop community-based restorative justice reentry programs. Noting that housing Alaska's inmates in out-of-state facilities is a weak point in the state's correctional system, the Commission asked the Department of Corrections to explore other options, including working with Native regional corporations to keep inmates in Alaska. Also, to help reduce the amount of alcohol reaching dry communities, the Commission recommends the establishment of alcohol distribution centers, such as the one in Barrow, in damp hub communities, restricting alcohol sales to residents of those communities also. The Commission concluded that there are insufficient prevention approaches in rural Alaska and urged the broadening of the use of prevention approaches. The Commission recommends expanding culturally appropriate programs to reduce the demand for alcohol in rural Alaska, starting with youth, linking youth with adults and healthy activities, and providing more information to schools for first-time misdemeanor alcohol or drug-related offenders. Expansion should also include more education, prevention, and early intervention programs targeting domestic violence and child abuse in rural Alaska, as well as the development of new prevention curricula to be implemented in kindergarten through eighth grade, teaching respect, establishing interpersonal relationships, and including a component on healthy behavior and the importance of remaining drug-free. The Commission recommends broadening the use of therapeutic approaches. Although there are a number of programs in rural Alaska that target the problems of substance abuse, domestic violence, child abuse and neglect, and sexual abuse, all of which are routinely tied to the consequences of substance abuse in rural Alaska, there is a great need to expand therapeutic approaches as related in the following recommendations. Alcohol drug abuse treatment programs should be expanded in rural Alaska with a system of longer-term residential care in hub communities, including for programs for women with children, matched with a network of aftercare services in rural villages. Substance abuse, mental health, and dual diagnosis treatment options for youth also need to be strengthened, as well as therapeutic courts and group homes for children in need of aid who are not appropriate for or unable to access foster care. By changing regulations to allow close relatives caring for children in need of aid to receive the same level of financial reimbursement that non-relatives now receive, the availability of care in rural Alaska could be greatly expanded. In the face of significant overrepresentation of Alaska Natives from rural communities who encounter legal problems with law enforcement, and an even greater overrepresentation of Alaska Natives in the correctional system in Alaska, there is a great and growing need to recruit and employ Alaska Natives in these systems. Noting that modeling is important in rehabilitation, as is cultural identity, the Commission recommends the implementation of a focused recruitment effort to bring more Alaska Natives and other rural Alaskans into the correctional, law enforcement, and public safety workforce. It also recommends increasing the training and utilization of village public safety officers as probation officers in the villages, and contracting with tribes to oversee community service work, which would increase the supervision of offenders on probation and parole in rural Alaska. The Commission reviewed a multitude of indicators that pointed to the relative lack of infrastructure to support police and public safety functions in rural Alaska, which in turn has a detrimental effect on recruitment and retention of officers. Specifically, the Commission recommends improvements and expansion in housing for police and public safety officers, increased availability of appropriate intra-community transportation, more law enforcement offices and holding facilities in rural Alaska, and improved law enforcement equipment. The Commission and the Department of Public Safety recommended that these improvements could be accomplished by constructing multi-purpose facilities with an apartment, an office, and a holding cell for the troopers in larger underserved village locations. Troopers who are currently assigned to hub communities would be reassigned to these new posts in what we would call sub-hub villages and would work at these locations on a rotating schedule. This concept exemplifies community-oriented policing and has many benefits, including reducing response times and providing a significantly enhanced law enforcement presence than has been possible in the past. The Department of Public Safety is already making progress and is about to implement the sub-hub concept in Cold Bay, using existing housing, and will proactively provide services to Perryville, False Pass, and King Cove. They are also looking for one or two other West Coast areas to test this concept. The Commission also recommends improved and expanded training and the development of standardized statewide data system to document and monitor law enforcement investigations in rural Alaska. The Commission found that residents of rural Alaska do not have access to sufficient civil legal assistance to redress legal problems related to domestic violence and child abuse, and recommends enhanced funding to respond to this need. The Commission also recommends that Congress restore federal funding opportunities for tribal courts located within the boundaries of municipalities. It also recommends the increased use of tribal courts and video conferencing capability, along with training and technical assistance to judges and support staff in the Alaska court system and in tribal courts to inform and instruct participants in both systems to be aware of and value the cultural differences in rural Alaska. Alaska enjoys the most sophisticated telehealth system in the world, the Alaska Federal Healthcare Access Network. But in the hundreds of rural Alaska villages that are incorporated into the AFCON, other organizations do not have access to the already in place broadband capabilities that are available in their community. To remedy this situation and improve communication within the law enforcement and judicial systems in rural Alaska, the Commission recommends changing regulations to allow rural police, public safety officers, and court officers to utilize this bandwidth. The Commission also recommends that the Department of Corrections explore the use of new electronic monitoring technology utilizing the global positioning system for rural Alaskan probationers, and that the Alcohol Beverage Control Board develop a statewide database for all alcohol written orders for the new community distribution centers. Most recommendations impacting state law will have at least minor fiscal impacts, and thus the Commission respectfully asks for your support. As Senator Ted Stevens echoed several weeks ago in his address to the legislature, both state and federal funding should be sought to implement important improvements needed for Alaska, which include the Rural Justice Commission's suggested recommendations. Senate Bill 210, sponsored by Senator Terrio, and Representative Myers, HB 373, incorporates several of these important recommended changes in Appendix H of the Commission's report that will help law enforcement better protect communities that have chosen to limit the sale or possession of alcohol under local option laws. Currently, more than 100 communities in Alaska have chosen a local option to combat the programs associated with alcohol abuse and violence. Senate Bill 210 strengthens current forfeiture provisions in statute by allowing seizure of alcohol transported by common carrier in violation of current law. The bill also authorizes the seizure of property determined to have been purchased or obtained through the proceeds of illegal importation or sale of alcohol and outlines procedures for a person claiming an interest in property that has been seized. Senate Bill 210 also defines manufacture of alcohol and provides consistency between statutes by amending allowable quantities. While current statute prohibits the manufacture of alcohol in a community that has adopted a local option, it does not include a definition. The legislation also clarifies statutes relating to the presumption of possession for sale. The Commission gives its full support to this legislation, as the provision it contains will provide clarity and assist law enforcement and communities in their continued interdiction efforts in damp or dry areas of the state. Senate Bill 210 has passed the Senate and is currently in the House Rules Committee awaiting action on the floor. Other Commission recommendations, including banning written order sales and the shipping of plastic by air to dry towns and changing the regulatory definition of a village from 1,000 to 1,500 individuals.
I'd like to just talk briefly about the Commission future. Writing the report was the easy part. Trying to implement some of these recommendations or attain funding perhaps for pilot projects to see if some of these can become reality, that becomes more difficult. And the Commission members suggested to Congress through Senator Stevens that the Commission's life continue rather than sunset to do that and to oversee and monitor the implementation of some of the recommendations. Senator Stevens has agreed to that and is provide continued funding for the Commission. The commissioners have also suggested to do this job well, we need to expand representation, including the State of Alaska Commissioner of Health and Social Services, as well as a representative of an Alaska Native health care provider, and a non-voting state court representative to be appointed by the Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, since so many of the issues revolve around judicial services in rural Alaska. What the Commission has determined needs to be done is to continue the dialogue with the stakeholders and monitor development of the recommendations, as I mentioned, conduct some additional research, and then evaluate the impact of the new activities as to whether or not the recommendations were sufficient to begin to grapple with some of these problems, or whether a new approach needs to be undertaken. Some of the objectives some of the ways in which the Commission will be doing this is advocating at state and federal levels if there's a need for a change in the law. Again, working with stakeholders and the public, really advocating with both government and non-government entities for the expansion of innovative prevention and early intervention and treatment programs. There are a lot of very good ideas out there. It's a need to get funding for many of them. An increased interest in recruitment, training, and hiring of the qualified Alaska Natives to be involved in law enforcement and the justice fields. I think the major issues that people thought we really need to be grasping with in rural Alaska immediately is the alcohol and substance abuse, these approaches, innovative approaches to try and prevent rather than grappling with it in the law enforcement and judicial services after it's become a problem. And also that we need to be addressing this as local solutions too and involving the local communities. I think that really sums up what the Commission hopes to accomplish in the future, and we'd be happy to take any questions that you may have at this time.
Senator Seekins, Mr. Chair, that we have two other commissioners present, Commissioner Tandesky of the Department of Public Safety, Commissioner Wilson Justin of the Commission. I don't know whether they had wanted to make any remarks or add anything.
Well, at this point, why don't we give them the opportunity to make any presentation that they'd like, and then we can hold questions for further into the commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Tandesky, Commissioner of Public Safety. If I could just...
Let me get him seated as well and on the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Wilson, Justin.
Wilson, welcome. Commissioner, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. Go ahead.
If I could just expound on a couple of things that were commented on. From the Department of Public Safety perspective, what we have tried to do is perhaps try some new concepts to see if we can make a difference at the ground level in villages. We know that it's very difficult to get a certified police officer in every community. The travel times and weather and all sorts of things interfere with our ability to get where we need to be sometimes. And so I think that one of the things that we have tried to do is talk in terms of public safety versus law enforcement, that there's a lot of things that we can do that deal with public safety versus the enforcement of law. The proactive ability to address truancy and curfews and alcohol issues and water safety and fire safety that don't require a certified police officer. And hence the pilot project that was mentioned. And I think that if we're waiting to have a certified police officer or a VPSO in every village, we're going to be waiting a long time because there simply are not enough applicants to even spend the resources we currently have allocated. My thought is on a pilot project to try to get an asset from within the village in the village that perhaps can work with the village health aid to make some positive impact on a number of these social issues that are not specifically law enforcement. Because as soon as we start talking a lot of law enforcement duty and a tremendous amount of law enforcement training, you get fewer folks from within the village wanting to do the job. And then you have to look outside the village, and we all know what that's like in terms of law enforcement, teachers, all sorts of challenges. So from a pilot project standpoint, that's where the department is looking to try using existing funding that's already there to see if such a concept would work. And I would count on my friend sitting next to me here to talk about something they're doing up in the Mount Sanford area that is frankly a little bit of a model for what I'm talking about here. Commented on the Postal Service, what we've tried to do is get cross-designation of authority for my drug troopers in rural Alaska. Obviously, it is very difficult if we have, we suspect drugs or alcohol shipped into Unalakleet or a village out of there, postal inspectors in Anchorage don't do us a tremendous amount of good. But I do have drug troopers, drug investigators in Kotzebue and Nome and Bethel, Dillingham. What I'm looking for is the ability to use assets we already have to their fullest. Now, the Postal Service is not particularly enamored with that idea, but we continue to work on that. What I have received in the past week is a commitment to, I think what they're going to do is assign one of their postal inspectors in Alaska virtually full-time to us to help us work the drug and alcohol, particularly with an emphasis on rural Alaska. So we're going to keep working that issue, and we're working closely with Senator Stevens' staff on this topic, our senior Senator Ted Stevens at the federal level, who has a great interest in this topic. So we'll continue working that one. The sub hub, to expound on that, there's really two aspects of that. Again, what I'm looking to do is try some things a little differently that perhaps gets us closer proactively versus reactively to pods of villages, and hence the sub-hub concept. We have hubs in western Alaska, Kotzebue, Nome, Bethel, King Salmon, Dillingham. But how do we get closer to pods of villages out of those hubs? And our first test was going to be Unalakleet. And because we obtained a housing unit from the Health Corporation that was vacant, and so my thought was we were going to start moving at a week at a time, trooper out of Nome into Unalakleet to work the villages right around there, again, proactively, whether there were any calls for service or not. Villages, go to the school, meet with the council, proactive interaction. Turned out we ended up having a trooper that wanted to live there full-time, so now we reactivated that post. So we have a seasonal housing unit in Cold Bay, so we're going to be working some villages down that direction out of Cold Bay. We're looking for a couple more possibilities. Again, always looking for existing housing possibilities. We're meeting regularly with Alaska Housing Finance, where they may be doing housing projects for health care or teacher housing that we can get in on the ground floor of something that's already going to be built and allow us to move in and out of areas proactively, which in some cases will get us around some weather systems and improve our ability. One of the bigger projects that I'm working on federally would be to build a facility either in Savungo or Gamble. And that would be the concept that the Attorney General mentioned that had to do with an apartment office holding facility that would allow us, again, concept pilot project to perhaps move troopers in and out of there on a North Slope schedule, two on, two off. Right now, I would guess that we don't have get a trooper to St. Lawrence Island much more than 5% of the time. I think we could have troopers on that island probably 80% of the time with this concept, without running into the problem of knowing that the vast majority of your recruitment for troopers comes from Anchorage and Fairbanks and the MAPSU. Not a tremendous amount of that population that is real excited about moving their families and children to St. Lawrence Island. But how do we get those full services on the ground? I think we've got to think a little bit outside the box, hence these pilot projects that we're talking about. And for the most part, what we're trying to do is use existing funding. We're not here saying, I'm asking you for money to build a facility in Savunga. I'm saying as we're exploring that, I think we'll have federal dollars to do that, and we'll use existing resources to staff it. But if we don't get proactive versus reactive, I don't think we make the headway that we're looking for. And I think that if you tie in back to the village safety aid concept, we already have a well-established village health aid program. And in villages that have no other real entity, they tend to carry an inordinate amount of the load in the village. And I think that another individual with some basic training from within the community to work with that health aid relieves some pressure from the health aid. They kind of support each other, much as the VPSOs do with health aids. They lean on each other. But if you're not going to get a VPSO and you're not going to get a certified police officer, and yet while we wait for those things to happen, suicides continue, accidental deaths continue, all those issues continue. So what can we lose by trying something different? This is not a concept to replace VPSOs. It is to provide another level. And the last thing I would comment is that, actually two things. The tiered training concept that was talked about, the Alaska Police Standards Council that I sit on will meet in Fairbanks on May 15th. I've asked that on the agenda be a discussion that Dean Guinelli and I, Dean from the Department of Law and myself, will brief the council on some of these concepts and some of these issues. Right now, village police officer regulations are under the Police Standards Council. VPSO training and standards are under the regulations of my department. Where VSAs turn out? If we're going to establish a tiered structure of training, I believe the Police Standards Council will be involved in some form or fashion. So we'll start that discussion May 15th in Fairbanks. And lastly, I would comment that one of the things I believe ultimately that you as lawmakers may need to deal with is something that probably would be fairly a little bit controversial. It's always preferable in my mind that some issues be handled at the local level. One of the things that Bethel has been dealing with in the last 6, 8, 9 months is the alcohol delivery site issue, much as Barrow has one and has had one for some time, and saw a marked reduction in their violent crime when that was established. Really helped them control alcohol issues in their region. We have, my department has worked with Bethel to try to support them to adopt this concept, which they can under current law. I wonder if at some point that we won't get to a point where lawmakers may have to consider whether or not they wish to impose that. We have talked amongst my group that I chaired in the subcommittees, which was the alcohol group, that we talked about whether or not concepts such as a certain percentage of villages that have voted local option in a particular region, whether or not that would rise to, could give rise to the mandatory delivery site in the hub for that region, or whether or not there should be an area-wide vote that included all those villages to the hub as to whether or not there would be a delivery site. There's not a real easy answer to that, but controlling drugs and alcohol going into these regions, I believe, is imperative for the issues that we are dealing with. And again, I'm not just talking law enforcement. I'm talking about the accidental deaths on four-wheelers and drownings and fires and all these things that I believe we can make an impact on that do not necessarily require a full-fledged law enforcement presence. If you can have one, great, but if you can't, what do we do in the interim to help alleviate these? So philosophically, for the things that I'm advocating for within the Department of Public Safety and things that we're already trying, that's the basis on which we are doing those things. Sir.
Thank you. Again, for the record, my name is Wilson Justin. My title is the Vice President for Mount Sanford Travel Consortium, but nowadays I also act as the acting president of the consortium. Mount Sanford is located in the Copper River region in the upper end of the Copper River Valley. Our sister organization towards the south of us is Copper River Native Association. The regional corporation is OTNA. We're right on the borderline between Tok and Glen Ellen in terms of judicial services and outreach. We're right on the borderline in terms of enforcement activities for Alaska State Troopers and the fish and game people. There's a whole host of other issues related to not only alignment, and by alignment I mean I'm talking about the fact that most tribal communities are proactive and are trying to develop restorative justice systems that work to strengthen the communities, and the alignment part comes with being able to develop the language and understanding of legal terms necessary to speak to state counterparts in terms of developing those services. So alignment is a very serious issue in my thinking in terms of the report that we've produced. Most tribal communities that I'm around or I'm aware of don't have what you would call a ingrained or a previous model that they want to sell to anybody. They want to develop models that will work for the community and deliver the kind of quality of life that they feel their constituents deserve. And I think this particular commission took a giant step forward in terms of putting that the process in the public eye, where people are saying, well, we're really working on the same problems. We just have different terminology and different cultural issues in terms of the outcomes. But in the long run, alignment is what, in my mind, is going to take care of a lot of the issues we have to contend with. And I speak personally from the standpoint that there's a tremendous amount of not necessarily conflict, but I guess intrusion into what you would call jurisdictional arenas on both sides of the question that remains to be worked out. But this step that we've taken opens the door to eventually approaching the question in what I consider the right way. Tribal communities are not in any way, shape, or form a threat to anybody. Matter of fact, if tribal communities and tribal officers and tribal motivated employees were not in place in these small and remote communities, they would have self-destructed a generation ago. In my estimation, it was only the ability of tribal communities to be what we would refer to as proactive that held things together long enough so that the problem could be brought to the public process and a great deal of attention, like the Commission has done, will help considerably. I credit the ability of the tribal communities to maintain themselves in the last 25 years. I give them a great deal of credit in ensuring that nothing went crazy out there like it's supposed to. And I'm talking about the fact that when I was growing up, and we're looking at the 60s and the 70s, I saw the destruction, almost total destruction of my people by alcohol. Nowadays, alcohol has lessened. We have substance abuse and drug issues. But when I was growing up, what I saw, no child should ever see. What I lived through, no child should ever live through. The kind of sexual abuse, the kind of alcoholism and the death that occurred from alcoholic activities, no child should ever be exposed to in any way, shape, or form. Under those conditions, you would think that these villages would have simply self-destructed and disappeared from now going on 100 years of these kind of impacts, but they haven't. They've actually strengthened their ability to respond to the issues and to the problems that pervades the community. Now comes the question of, well, we can't do it all by ourselves. Who's going to be the partners that we're going to continue the battle with? And I think by and large what this report says is that, well, you only have one real partner that you want to deal with, and that's the state of Alaska. The real question, in my estimation, is whether or not the state of Alaska wants to partner up with the tribal communities and other remote rural communities in terms of dealing with what we would call the constant flow of substance abuse. In winding down my remarks, I'd like to also remind the Judiciary Committee that it's easy to overlook the rural communities. It's also easy to not think of them because of the small population. But I do want to, for the record, remind this committee that a tremendous amount of dollars come into Anchorage and Fairbanks from these communities. Mount Sanford Tribal Consortium, Copper River Native Association, Mentasta Tribal Council, Chichna Tribal Council, and all the other tribal councils up there, in total, in sum total, with federal dollars and some state dollars, probably, and I can only guess because I only know about Mount Sanford and Mentasta and Chichna, probably bring in about $3.5 to $5 million to Anchorage every year. And you need to look at it in those terms. These monies are being developed out there by these communities, and they benefit Anchorage. Mount Sanford has a operating yearly budget of about $2.4 million, and probably at least 80% of that funding goes to Anchorage. So I get a little bit resentful when Anchorage steps to the plate and say, well, our problems are big and bigger, and we need more money. Because then I say, well, gee, quite a bit of that money that you already have comes from the rural communities.
I'll be happier when a bigger percentage of it goes to Fairbanks, Wilson.
Well, I think that's occurring now as we speak. I don't think people realize.
You didn't get points there by saying 80% going to. I'm giving you a hard time.
It's acceptable. I don't think people realize the dynamics and the shift and changes that's going on in the tribal communities in Alaska. They're very modern, and they are very. Tribal communities are working very hard to not only develop new models that will accommodate traditions and values from 150 years ago, but also encapsulate the younger generation, the youth. It's the youth that everybody's concerned about. So in my estimation, what the Commission did here was really to open the door to the question of whether or not we want to be partners. And I think that's really the ultimate issue that needs to be resolved. Do you want to collaborate and do you want to partner up? Or is everybody going to go their own Lone Ranger way and try to solve the problem with whatever tools they can grab at the moment that the issue occurs? I'll leave it at that. I thank the committee for the opportunity to talk to you, and I also would like on the record to thank the Alaska Native Justice Center for their long and dedicated effort to the issue of tribal justice activities in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. David, do you have additional people that you'd like to have speak with us this morning before we get into some question and answer?
I think that's all the commissioners present, and the AJC wants to make any remarks.
Okay. The just a couple of things, maybe we can start here where we are. And Wilson, actually, I'll tell you that the number of dollars that come in and out of a village don't particularly motivate me to try to deal in the area of human rights as a legislator and try to find what our area of responsibility as a state of Alaska to our citizens. And those folks that live in the village are our citizens, and we have a constitutional responsibility to provide for certain public safety, other ways to be able to address some of these problems. And in my community, I have drug and alcohol problems. You know, the commissioner may know, I know the captain knows in Fairbanks that, you know, when we start seeing the traffic going into the park that's two lots down from my house along the river, we make phone calls. And, you know, guess what? Generally, when a trooper shows up, that activity moves somewhere else. I'm not saying that it stops, but having that presence there makes a big difference sometimes in the level of illegal activity that at least takes part in my community. Alcohol is a big problem in my community as well, and has a huge effect. We look as the Judiciary Committee at the numbers in the court system every year, and we with the Department of Law, and we see that some 85% roughly of the people that we have housed in jail on an annual basis are what we would call indigent drunks. They don't have the money to defend themselves when we arrest them, so we arrest them, we prosecute them, we defend them, we house them in jail, we put their families on welfare, and then we put them in the probation system on an after-the-fact basis as well. So we recognize the immensity of that problem. One of the things that's been very interesting for me over the years is when you don't wear a badge or a uniform and you go into some of the communities and you sometimes sit and listen, or you go to the schools, or you do a few other things, you find out some tremendous things that maybe the officials that are investigating don't find out. You were talking about Cold Bay, Commissioner, and I remember going out there and visiting King Cove. We were looking at the health facilities. Fantastic health facility out there, and the communication process was amazing. Digital X-rays, a doctor in Anchorage could take a look at the same time that someone in Cold Bay was sitting there in real time. Being able to dispense prescriptions by electronic means. Doing things that are fantastic in that area. But in King Cove, they had a police department, a fire department, and a VPSO. I don't know if that's still the case or not. I'm not trying to be critical, Mr. Commissioner, but I thought, why couldn't that VPSO, you know, be somewhere else where we already had a police department and a fire department in the community? Going back from